My name is Jared. I'm a believer in Jesus, and I struggle with everything. In fact, the root of my struggles are being born with dyslexia. Both my parents were reasonably high achievers. My mother was a civil servant. My father was a banker in the City of London, when they used to make money in the City of London, actually. adding to this, my older sister was very good at her academic grades. And for me, I felt that set a benchmark that I had to follow. This was not going to be the case. And from an early age, this was enhanced by my peer group, who would tease me and attempt to bully me when I was at school, because actually I couldn't read well aloud in class, neither could I recite my tables by rote. And to be quite honest, teachers at that time in the 60s were not much better. I remember being called stupid. I remember being called a slow learner. I remember being humiliated in front of all and sundry. However hard I tried, and this probably is the root of me being a workaholic, and however long I tried, and that's probably the root of my perfectionism, I could not learn to read, write, or add up numerically. You know, I didn't fit in this world, and actually, I didn't understand this world. I could not do what these adults wanted me to do. You know, I started to hear phrases like, he's just lazy, he talks too much. Well, that's probably true, but there you go. And he needs to concentrate more. And the final straw was actually when I was in front of a child psychologist, and my father was there, and he said, I don't understand. Gerald's highly intelligent, he should be top of the class. Well, in fact, I was always 43rd out of 45. And, you know, pretty much I would say, well, thanks, Mr. Psychologist, that's just another stick to beat me with. Don't get me wrong. My mother and father love me and love me today. And I think I had the best nan in the world. I mean, she gave me so much unconditional love. I remember when she used to come around to see her, she'd be probably a big lady, she'd wear a big fur coat. And I'd run up the path to see her, and she would just engulf me in that coat, you know. So don't get me wrong, I did know I was loved. Eventually, I had to travel 10 miles twice a week to a different school, where I attended special reading and numeracy lessons. I was, however, at that time, actually, unfortunately, you know, I was with children who did have learning disabilities, you know, and I knew I was not the same as them. You know, I was grateful on one hand, but I felt sorry for them on the other. And, you know, it must have been 9 years old. I felt I wanted to help them, you know, and in many ways, that's probably the root of me being a fixer. You know, it's probably the root of me being a fixer. And once again, I didn't fit anywhere, to be quite honest with you. And I believe this was the, you know, the seeds of my feeling of rejection and my unworthiness. I think the seeds were sown very much at that early age. Well, eventually, you know, you finish school, and I did leave school. I left school at the age of 16, or education at the age of 16, and also at the same time I was leaving home. And I was leaving with a 25-yard swimming certificate, and I'd passed my cycling proficiency test. So, you know, hey guys, I was not going to drown, and hopefully I wasn't going to get killed on the roads. So, you know, I was going to, you know, two things were good as far as I was concerned. By the age of 16, I'd lost, actually, three of my mates had died, and one of them being a young man called Martin. He was from a Jewish family, and I went to work for his father. He was a market trader. We were selling fabrics in the East End of London. And now this guy I was working for was pretty fearless. You know, he had done it all, from fighting with Mosley in his black shirts to drinking with the Cray twins in The Blind Beggar. And at 16, you know, what guy could want a better life coach than that? You know, he was going to teach me everything I needed to know. And to be honest, a bit like Fagin and Oliver Twist. I have to say, these were fun days. You know, I nearly had to pay for my own beer on one occasion. You know, so they were great times, but they weren't righteous by any means, and they were not righteous. But hey, by the age of 20, I'd had enough. I needed to get a real job, so I moved back home. I think my parents were pleased, I'm not sure. I moved back home, and I now actually got a job, still within sort of like the rag trade orientated, but it was wholesale. I was now working in the fashion business, showroom, West End of London. I was sort of like a storeman stroke salesman. And within about a year, I was fully signed up, booted, suited. I was the rep for London and the Home Counties. I thought I had arrived. I really thought I'd arrived. Pretty much, I arrived the day I was born, but I thought I'd arrived. I got the company car, I got the expense account, I got the good wages, I got the commission, I got the freedom. All I had to do was achieve these sales targets, which I could do easy. I mean, dyslexia, talking is probably the natural thing you do as a dyslexic. You don't want to write or read anything. And plus, being pretty gabby, I was home and dry. This was a good time. And basically, for the next 15 years, I lived full on in the world, and I was just doing what I wanted to do because I could do it. Eventually, I got married, and we had a daughter, but our relationship was not to last. It failed. My wife and I had many unresolved issues, but being a fixer, I thought I could sort them out for her. I couldn't. They were too big, and I was about to find out as we started to get divorced that, hurting people do hurt people. There's no doubt about it. That's the way it is. Okay, the craziest days of my life started to unfold. The worst being finding myself locked in a police cell accused of the most bizarre accusations. You may ask, where was God in any of this? I believe he was. As a child, my father took me to church. It was all quite religious stuff then. I believed in a God. I didn't exactly know him. He'd knocked on the door a few times. I had said hello. I'd also said goodbye. But I now found myself powerless and quite angry, actually. I remember this is a statement I made. I found myself saying, okay, God, if you exist, you need to do something about this situation because you know the truth of this situation. This is unfair and unjust. And I thought, probably not the way to speak to your God. So I said, okay, God, I'll rephrase that. Please, would you help me? And he did. Over the next 8 months, Christians seemed to be everywhere. You were coming out of the woodwork at me, basically. And I walked back into work, where I was working at this time, to find the staff room had been rearranged. And I was now sitting next to a guy called Paul. And Paul would come into the FE college. I was teaching in an FE college at the time, where we worked. He would open his case, get out his Bible, and bang it on his desk. He was hiding nothing, basically. And one day, I must admit, he looked at me and said, you all right, Jared? I went, not really. I said, can't humans just be so damned horrible to each other? And he looked at me and said, well, Jared, what I think? All I've got to say, Jared, is Jesus, if you haven't got... Gerard, if you haven't got Jesus in your life, it's open season for the devil. And it's weird, this is going on about 10 to 9 in a staff room with people walking in and out and computers running, telephones ringing, and it was like a time warp, to be quite honest with you. And he looked me squarely in the eyes and he said to him, would you like me to pray for you? And this is like 10 to 9 in a staff room. What are you going to do it right now here, are you? What actually is going to happen if I say yes to this? But I must admit, I just said, Paul, you might as well, because nothing else seems to be working. And actually, he left. He went to do his teach, and I was off to do my teach. The next time I saw Paul, he was walking down the corridor, and he stuffed this carrier bag in my hand. He said, got this for you, Gerard. And I'm just, right, okay. I got back to the staff room, and... I opened it up and the guy bought me a Bible. I thought, I'll turn this Bible up, turn it over. I went, how much did it cost? How much these things cost? Money was so important at one time. In Canada, it's $64. Where's England? Oh, 32 quid. I thought, this guy doesn't even know me. Why on earth should he spend 32 quid on me? And to be quite honest, probably the first act of kindness I'd received in a long time. I thought maybe the best thing that I could do was attempt to read it. And this time, my life was in bits. I felt like I was actually living in dysfunction city. And this man Jesus, he seemed to have some good advice for a reasonable, peaceful life. So I decided to give this personal relationship a go. And I started talking and praying to Jesus. And as probably some of you know, I hope not too many of you, but some of you may know that getting divorced can be an expensive business. So I remember saying, Lord, I have more going out of my bank account than money coming in, and basically I need some more money. I mean, that actual day, the phone rang. The next mature student of mine rang me from college, and his name was Jed. And yes, you got it. He was a Christian. Keep coming at me. Asking me if I could help him complete a job. But he said, I can't pay you a lot of money. Well, I didn't need a lot. I just needed some. And to cut to the chase, really, Jed brought me to CCD one Sunday. And that's actually where I met Tony Turner. And I have to say, at that time, I was not completely out of the woods. The rubber of my life was still hitting the road. And I have to say, I wonder if I would still be on the planet if it was not for the love and kindness of that man and his wife showed me. Unfortunately, there were times when, you know, I wanted to check out planet Earth. But hey, as you can see, I haven't got wings. Thank God I'm still here. And thanks, Celebrate Recovery. Why Celebrate Recovery? You know, that's that last question when you look at your testimony. Why Celebrate Recovery? Well, I came to Celebrate Recovery when I was getting divorced. I was an emotional wreck. I was beaten up by the world. A lot of my own stuff and some of other people's stuff. I needed a safe place to work it out. I needed to work out the who's, the what's, the why's, the when's of my life and how I was going to go forward in my life in a different way and feel reasonably happy. You know, today I'm not perfect. I actually, you know, I always remember the day Tony Turner came to me and said, Gerard, I'm not perfect. I could let you down. I thought, could you? And you could let me down? But someone's turned the radio on. It's okay. Let's have a bit of music in the back in there. It's okay. I forgive you. It's okay. It's okay. I remember the day Tony said to me, you know, hey, I'm not perfect. You know, yes, I still struggle with trusting women after my divorce, but I'm getting better. God knows I'm a work in progress. I'm in a safe place. I'm with a safe team of people around me. You know, I love my CR teammates. They won't let me drift for too long into denial. They'll help me stay safe, living in reality. You know, however hard that is. I mean, reality is tough, but it's better to go through it, round it, under it, over it, or just go off into denial or fantasy land. I mean, for me, probably the hardest lesson for me to get my head round was denial. You know, I just like staying in denial. You know, it's just a nice place to be because you don't have to do anything, really. You can just live in that little dream world of your own. I mean, one of the, I think, the most revealing lessons for me was sanity. I love that thing about sanity, about doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result. You know, why didn't I think of that, you know, 30 years ago? Hey, anyway. And one of my favourite lessons, to be quite honest, is forgiveness. Because, you know, if you get through that, you are free. And that's what a lot of Celebrate Recovery is about being free. And if you would ask me to give you a scripture, it would be from Proverbs 29. And it is dangerous to be concerned with what others think of you. But if you trust in the Lord, you are safe. Amen. Thanks for letting me share. It's been a good thing to do. Bless you.